This is Belonging, a podcast that explores being alive in the age of loneliness. I'm your host, Becca Piastrelli, a writer, mother, and community tender currently living on the ancestral lands of the Coast Miwok people in present-day Marin County, California. In this show, we explore topics like rites of passage, cultivating meaningful community, seasonal and cyclical living, and what it means to be a good ancestor in these times. I have thought-provoking conversations with friends, teachers, elders, and ancestral medicine keepers to help support you in bringing more meaning and connection to your life. I also pop in here and there to share updates and learnings from my own story, because we were meant to do this together, cosmically holding hands as we walk the spiral of life. You can expect to be challenged by new or old ideas, face your beliefs and what systems informed them, get curious and brave to tell the truth about the deeper, harder things, and feel comforted in the knowing that you don't have to navigate it all alone. Hello and welcome back to Belonging. It's Becca Piastrelli here on the heels of COVID. Just getting over it. Was waiting to record this intro because I have quite a raspy voice after 10 days with the vid, but feeling better and so, so grateful to my body and to bone broth. Shout out to bone broth. I just want to say, if you don't make your own bone broth and you're buying it, you just don't know what you're missing out on. So I'm sure you can look up a bone broth recipe on the internet, but I just want to tell you what I put in mine. I feel very strongly about this because bone broth is nature's miracle. Truly. So good for you. So healing in so many ways. So here's what I do. The basics are bones. Now, obviously, this is for people who are not vegan. If you are, just like skip ahead 30 seconds to a minute and we'll get on with this. But what we do is we like roast a chicken once a week and we just keep the carcass and the bones. A friend of mine, Nisha Moodley, said that every time like we eat like chicken wings or any chicken in the house or another animal, just keep all those bones. They're all good. Or you can buy the bones. But where I live, bones are now really expensive because everyone's making their bone broth. So just get what you can. Bones and then a little bit of vinegar, like an apple cider vinegar that helps pull the nutrients out of the bones and then fill it a pot of water. Then I add 2 cloves of garlic that I chop. I chop a whole onion in half and put it in there. I have a big knobbly piece of ginger that I chop up and I put in there. Ginger is magic. And then I put a lot of veggie scraps. So throughout the weeks when I'm like cooking veggies, if I'm not giving it to the worm compost or the chicken compost, particularly onions, which you can't give to either, I just put it in a bag in my freezer. So, you know, like ends of carrots or celery or anything like that. You just take it and you put it in the pot frozen. And then I add in, this is the secret. Every year, I either grow, forage, or buy from a farmer at the farmer's market nettle, right when it's like beautiful in like after the rains where I live. The rains are in like midwinter, and I buy a big bag of nettle. Yes, stinging nettle. You're going to be okay if you get stung. It's actually really great for blood flow. And I put it in the freezer. And that's like for the whole year. So I buy a lot. And when you freeze it, it's not stingy anymore. And then I take a handful of frozen nettle and I put it in the pot. And then chicken feet. If you can handle it, chicken feet, clean chicken feet. They're so gelatinous. And so that's going to make your bone broth feel like have that sort of gelatinous jelly nature. That's just so good for your digestive system, for your gut, for your bones, for your skin, for your nails, for your hair, for healing. So I have it boiling right now upstairs. And you can add all sorts of other things that you want to, but that's like my tried and true recipe. Oh my gosh, and I forgot, a lemon. Cut a lemon in half. Didn't think I'd be giving this recipe. And I bet you have really amazing bone broth recipes too. So always hit me up for extra ingredients for your tried and true bone broth. And then I simmer it on the stove for 24 hours. Other people do it in a crock pot or a pressure cooker. I like to simmer it for 24 hours and fill the house with magical smells. So anyways, there you go. This episode brought to you by bone broth recipes to help you with your illnesses of the changing season. So I wanted to share with you that I just got back from a really nourishing community gathering and ritual. That's also where I got COVID. It was so special. So it was a gathering up on the East Coast in Connecticut where we have a friend who has land. And this community, we all used to live together in the Bay Area of California, but a lot of us have gone our separate ways. And it's made us really sad about the fact that we don't all live on a compound, on a farm. But I don't know if that's actually realistic in this time, in these times, or if we can all financially afford that or work with that. So what we do is we commit to at least once a year coming together for the beginning of spring here in the Northern Hemisphere, Beltane, May 1st, May Day, all sorts of terms for it, and honor it. And we have an honored elder, Grandmother Sarah McLean Bicknell, who I've interviewed on this podcast, who comes and shares her ways, indigenous to the British Isles. But we also have a diverse community of folks who are trying to reclaim their ancestry in all ways. And we aren't trying to remake what our ancestors did 200, 300 years ago. We're taking that energy and we're creating ritual for us. So Tim helped build a maypole. And we have a friend, Gina Biamonte, Bloom Generation, who adorned the maypole crown. And then we had people take on roles from the Beltane ritual. You can look it up if you're like, what are you talking about, Becca? And we have such a beautiful queer community, both with sexuality and in gender expression. And so we had different expressions of what masculine, feminine, and sexuality meant to each of us in the way we dressed and who wore the flower crowns and who danced the maypole and who jumped the fire. And it was just a moment after many years. It started with, you know, a little dinner where everyone wore a flower crown if they wanted to. And we didn't, we just had like a general conversation about community at the dinner table and maybe talked about how flowers are the sexual organs of a plant. And that was it. And we've come so far to be in a space where people want to, you know, set aside funds and time and leadership to make this happen. And every year we're like, will it happen again? I don't know. But it was really special to have Atlas be a part of it and wear her white dress and her crown of flowers and watch me dance the maypole and be a little concerned about Mama, but also like, okay, Dada's here too, so we're going to be okay. And there's music and I love music. And really, really calling and envisioning a lot more parents there just in this community. I'm one of the only parents bringing a young child. And just from our last episode, talking with Megan McGuire and Ariella Daly, really wanting to create community ritual and gatherings that are centered around the children so that it's not like kids tucked in the corner having to run off to nap them and missing important elements. So I think that's where my leadership is in this community, is being a voice for that and helping folks realize with the timeline and with the spaces that this is how you can incorporate families. Because once you have a child, however you have one, like your life is forever changed and you want to include your family in ritual. At least that's my experience. So I was excited to share that with you. It was a really special and powerful space to be in. And last year when we went, Alice was 8 months old and I was so sleep deprived and was nursing her or napping her so much of the day that I felt really othered in the space and shared it. And we're working towards a new and different way. And then the other reason I was out on the East Coast is, if you listened to the last episode, you know that Tim and I are looking for a new home to create community. And yeah, we're considering leaving California, which is apparently very controversial to all my beloved friends here. But it's, yes, that's what we're looking. So we looked at a few communities and schools, but mostly we sat in our Airbnb for a week with COVID. Going crazy. So that's where I've been, in case you wanted to know. And that's why I have a raspy voice at this moment. And today I have a conversation for you with another repeat guest. I'm loving asking my friends on this podcast, having rapport with them and talking even deeper with them. So Asha Frost is an Anishinaabe or Ojibwe medicine woman and member of the Chippewas of Nawash First Nation. And she's a healer and spiritual mentor. And we had her on the podcast a few years ago when her viral article, Dear White Woman Who Wants to Be Like Me, took off. And as she shares in the episode, led to a lot of intense trolling, frankly, but also put her on the map in a way that she got a book deal. And her book just came out, You Are the Medicine. I highly recommend getting this book. It's beautiful. It follows the moons and the medicine that goes with it from her own ancestral gnosis and connection to the earth. It's a really beautiful way to support indigenous knowledge and indigenous ways. And it's just a lovely, lovely book. So in this conversation, we talk about the medicine of publishing a book. Like, we both published books in the last year. Like, we talk about it. Real deal, folks. You know how it is around here. We discuss why we felt called to write, how books can be like babies. They're not babies, but they're like babies. And the ways releasing our books made us more resilient. We talk about how both our books are invitations to move at a slower earth pace. And then we have to walk our talk and do that too. So it's a call to recognize the postpartum grief that comes when you release creative work. You work so hard on it for so long, and then it goes out into the world, and there is a heaviness after that. So we talk about that. And it's an opportunity to embrace the end of the extended winter we've been undergoing and to craft rites of passage for ourselves that acknowledge a new season. Basically, it's about throwing parties and how we need to throw more parties for ourselves. And if anyone tells us, are you throwing too many parties? Are you celebrating yourself too much? Say, are you celebrating yourself not enough? And I would love to celebrate you. Will you celebrate me more? I am excited to share this with you. I love Asha so much. You Are the Medicine, again, is the name of her book. Please go get it. Listen to her magical voice and maybe listen to it on Audible, because some of us just want to be read too. And that's a beautiful thing. Okay, I'll get out of the way. Join us for this conversation with Asha Frost. For postpartum depression, which was like really a big deal, and it really helped. I'm just like contending with the fact that, I don't know, all the feelings that brings up, right? Of like how our ancestors used to do it and how that is impossible now.
Oh my gosh. And Becca, you had her during a pandemic.
I'm like just realizing how like traumatic that was. I feel weird even using the word traumatic, because I'm like, trauma is much more intense. But you know, Asha, the week she was born, the smoke was so bad here, it looked like the sun didn't rise.
Oh my God.
Like the sky was dark red all day. Like we lived on Mars. It was truly like, I don't know. I went to a place in my head where I was just like, what is this world she is born into? But yeah, it was wild.
And then you also had your book come out during that time too. Like, I really think you need to give yourself credit, because it's really hard.
You understand.
Yes.
I know. I have the book right here. Book.
It's a lot.
I want to talk about that. Yeah. So I've talked a lot on the podcast about how it's a dream come true, right? To publish a book. And it's also like when you work with a publisher, which is also very helpful, there's certain things you just have to do contractually. And so I had to edit it 1 month postpartum. Can you imagine? Yeah. you have two littles. Yeah.
It's not ideal. Like, even for my last edit, they were like, oh, there's supply chain issues. We're doing it. You have to have it done in 3 hours. And I was like, it was like my last, I had to like look over everything and make sure it was all perfect in 3 hours. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. Cause they were like, oh, it's Thanksgiving, so we have to have this done before this gets good things every week. And I was like, so yeah, I was frustrated about that, because everything that I had to deliver had to be on time. And then everything they gave back, I don't know if that happened for you too, but it was like, yeah. I had to plan it out, because I was like, well, my kids are good. We're in lockdown again. Kids are home. I'd really like to get this done before, you know. So it's frustrating. I find that frustrating.
The whole book for you happened in lockdown.
Yeah.
Everything. Yeah. Like, how, you know, I think this whole thing with me sharing so much about motherhood is just, it's really important to me as someone who's been just constantly mystified by how people do things.
I know.
You know, like, how are you running a business and being a mother? How did you publish a book? Like, how did you navigate like some really like major grief or, you know, intense, autoimmune disease. Like, how are we doing it? And I think there's such a disservice in, I'm grateful to social media, but it's such a disservice as far as like, we don't, we share the highlights. So it's like, which, you know, we want to celebrate, but I'm just like, here's how it happened. It was rough. There were bad days. Like,
I know.
And also I did it and I'm proud of it, but yeah. So
I hear you. Well, I just commend you because I know, like, after it came out, I thought about you a lot actually, because I was like, how did she have a newborn and write and get all these parts and then launch?
Yeah.
Because a launch is just a lot of like outward focus stuff, you know? And
totally. Energy, lots of energy. Yeah, energy. And I think there's an added layer for you being an Indigenous woman and just like the labor you have to do in the launch. You don't have to, right? But you're being asked to do around. Yeah, and the education, right? Yeah, that's probably so exhausting. And you're a mother and you have autoimmune
issues.
Yeah. So there's so much there. You have to be tracking. And your book, You Are the Medicine, is out. And you did it. And I just want to say congratulations. I know how much behind the scenes goes into it. How far are you out from publishing?
It was a month last week. So it's like 5 weeks.
So it's fresh.
Yes, it's fresh. It's very fresh.
Well, I'll just say to the audience, this is your second time guest. What I've been doing lately is just inviting like my most beloveds back on, because I'm just like, how I want to be doing life, you know, and catching up. So episode 57 called Web of Connection with Asha Frost. If you want to know a bit more about what you share both in the beginning of the book and this really viral article you wrote called Dear White Woman Who Wants to Be Like Me. Mm-hmm. And we talk a lot about your experience as an Indigenous woman and cultural appropriation and all of that. We're not going to talk about that today, but that's a really excellent episode to listen to and hear more from this incredible woman, Asha Frost. What we're going to talk about today is, I really am interested in the motherhood comparison and postpartum comparison of writing and launching a book, this incredible book you shared. Maybe you can just give that like sort of snapshot you give everyone about what the book is about so they can go grab it.
Sure. So it is, well, it's based around the 13 moon cycles of the year, and each moon cycle has its own medicine. So its own teaching, its own essence, its own energy. So I really wrote it almost as an oracle that folks could perhaps just flip through and see what medicine is speaking to them at this time. Of course, our world is very linear and, you know, Indigenous knowledge and ways of being is very cyclical. So I really had that vision of it just being like little medicine, potent medicine, wisdom parts that you could just read into and then help you remember who you are. So it's infused. People are like, oh, did you plan it all out? It really was channeled. It was very channeled. And the words are very, I wanted to infuse them with a vibration that would help that remembering. And come back to that divine knowing that really you're enough and you belong, because that's the folks I work with. That's always the thing they struggle with the most, the belonging, the disconnection, and also how colonization, capitalism, the patriarchy, how that strips so much away from us and how we need to unwind some of that to come back to our true knowing and connection. So each moon has an animal medicine that goes along with the moon. So you can learn about the animal spirit for that moon and then how you can incorporate those teachings into your own life in your own way without taking and appropriating from other people's culture.
Mm, it's beautiful. I think having written a book, reading other people's books, I'm really appreciating more deeply how they're laid out. And that's so interesting that you say it was channeled, because I remember I took a look at it right when I got it a few weeks ago. And I was just like, how and from who? And I know, so you are Indigenous Ojibwe, mm-hmm. living on the land currently known as Canada. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if this was like passed down Indigenous knowledge through elders or if it comes from within. And it sounds like maybe a little bit of both, this whole idea of gnosis, G-O-N-O-S-I-S, right? That we have Indigenous wisdom in us and we have earth connection in us. And if we can call that up, that we can write our stories and our myths now and be the medicine now. So I'm just curious, about that with you.
Well, the sad thing is, and I write about this in the book, is that so much of our knowledge was almost extinguished. And there's so much disconnection, which is part of my story, because my grandparents were in a residential school and very colonized and wanting to do that assimilation piece in part. So that is part of my history. So I've had to find different ways of knowing and being and returning to those ways, living not in my First Nation, not in my community, for certain reasons, such as that trauma that kind of carries through. So coming back, how do you come back when you aren't around your village in that way and you don't have those elders living next door? How do you come back? My mother was always such a beautiful teacher for me. And we lived in a very white, like white town and away from that Indigenous knowledge. So returning does involve dreaming, visioning, working with different teachers, of course, but also listening to that divine wisdom that comes with from within. And something I was very conscious of as well is there's so much that comes my way from my community around what I share. So I wanted to be very, very particular about this being channeled from my spirit and connected to my ancestry and also channeled from my own medicine, because that was really important to me, that that I was in right relationship with my community as well and sharing from this place. That was really a very, very important intention.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many parallels between my intention with my book, Root and Ritual, which is like the reality, the truth of being alive in these times and having, you know, this braided blood from various lands and processing that grief and letting it be here, and also embodying earth ways and the ways of our ancestors, even if we don't have that written down, which most of us don't. And I'm finding, as a woman entirely from old European lands, often what's written down is written, you know, by the victors. And so to just not be always seeking, there's something about our linear capitalist minds of like, just tell me what it is and that's truth. I sort of see like how people adhere to the Bible in that way. And it's like, well, actually, if you could look through history, even for you as a Indigenous woman, to be like, what has influenced those? And who wrote them, and what wasn't written down, and who never learned to read, you know, or write, and what was lost, you know, when they became ancestors, you know, and they left their bodies. And so where can we find our meaning, and where can we find our ritual, and how can we do it in a good way? It's a big question, and one I don't want us to run away from or shy away from out of fear of being wrong or bad. And a lot of it is finding teachers, and a lot of it is slowing down. Don't just Google it all, right? And tune in. So I think that's beautiful that this book is that offering. And I think my linear brain is very appreciative of the framework of the 13 moons. There's something about that just feels like, okay, thank you. I have something I can sink into. And the seasonal aspect of it too seems really helpful. Okay, so when did you know you wanted to write a book?
I feel embarrassed saying this, but I didn't know. I didn't know. Uh-huh. It was mostly people in my community were saying like, when are you going to write this book? You know, I had this Facebook community that they just always would say this, like, this would be such a good book. Your post would be such a good book all put together. And it was somebody just approached me and said, you know, Hay House is doing this thing. It's this diverse wisdom contest. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they asked me like, you just have to write this like little essay and just apply. So I did that. And at the time I just had released my Dear White Woman letter. So I thought, oh, well, I'll include that in there. If they're really serious about this and they really want to like invite an Indigenous voice in there, it has to be filled with truth. So that was my most truthful thing at the time. And they said, oh yes, sure. You can come to this writer's workshop. And there was like 15 of us. So it was a competition. I don't love saying that, but that's what it was.
Was that so scary?
It was. But I remember being at the workshop and then coming home and feeling like, I just knew that it was that moment where I was like, I want to do this. Like, I just felt it. It's almost like that awakened it. So it was like it awakened something inside of me. And I worked really hard on that proposal because I thought,
yeah,
this is it. Like, I see things, I guess, those opportunities as I can pour everything into this and then say that I did my best. So that's what happened. And then I found out like the day before my birthday, I remember. I got a call.
I remember just cheering so much for you. And I'm just so thrilled. Particularly, I'm really happy at Hay House because they came under fire. It seems like they're really responding and evolving, like all of us are,
yeah,
right?
I think and we have to. Well, yeah. And that, I mean, that kind of the under fire came after I got that deal. So even that journey was challenging for me because it was a question, are you going to stay or are you going to go? And a lot of people ask me that. How can you stay now that all of this is happening? And I had to do a lot of inner like self-reflection around that. Like, where am I going to make the most impact? And I knew that taking up space, since they don't have a lot of Indigenous authors there, that was the place that was going to create the most ripple for my path. That's what I felt. But I had to get, it took me a while to get strong in that. So it's not always like a straight line, right? Sometimes it's just like, oh my goodness, is this the right thing? But I'm so glad I did it now, because I feel like, yeah. Oh my goodness, now it has a sphere of its own, and it's just, it's making its impact that I dreamed of it to make, and it's doing its thing. So I'm so grateful that I said yes.
I really feel that in my own experience of writing my book. For a while, it was like my heart outside of myself, similar to a child, and really tender about it. And then I had to do some, I got like a crappy Amazon review, and it really took me and my legs out from underneath me. What did they call it? Guys, don't go on Amazon and touch it. Let it be. I think I was called like typical woke, you know, something like that. I was like, okay. But I had to do a deep ritual with my therapist to remember that my work is done. And this book is similar to a child. Like, it is now your turn to live out your destiny, to live out your, have your ripple effect. Have, if you're a spell, that's how I thought of it, right? A spell out in the world. And I can't control you. I don't want to, you know, reel you back in. That's like a codependent ancestral pattern I'm really trying to break, you know, of not letting the child go, letting the creation go and have legs, have wings. So it sounds like you figured that out maybe sooner than I did. And I think that's a really healthy way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a daily practice, right? It's a daily, because it does feel like you birthed something really big, and it does feel like a child. I people told me that, and I kind of didn't believe them.
Right, you're like, I've had children. It's different. That's not cool. Right. And then you're like, oh.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess I'm curious how it felt leading up to, because what happens is you turn in the book, then you have to turn in edits, and sometimes you turn in edits again, sometimes you turn in edits a third time. You go through book cover stuff, you go through all these things, and then there's a long wait until it comes out. And how was that lead up for you, emotionally, mentally, spiritually?
Yeah, I think it was interesting because I've launched programs before, and so I knew what a launch would entail. And I was just feeling a little bit like, I was feeling anxious about it. I was like, oh my goodness, this is like, it's actually going to come out. Because it is a long process from when I started, like I think that was 2019 that I applied, when I put my essay in, and then it didn't come out till March 2022. So it was a long process of writing. And it's interesting too, because you write things very in the moment. And you look back, and like even in there, I received a new spirit name recently, and my other spirit name, not my old spirit name, they're both the same, or I'm still using them both, but that's in there. And I thought, oh my goodness, I've already kind of evolved a little bit out of that space, but this is what's out there, and it's being launched now. So leading up to the launch phase, I just knew I had to gather a lot of energy. I knew that I needed the capacity to be able to put the energy into it that I really wanted to. But I didn't actually really realize how much capacity you actually need to show up so much and share so much of your biggest dream.
Yeah. Over and over again. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Elizabeth Gilbert says, the book is never done. It's due. Mm. And then the second part, which I heard her say in person when she was launching her book, City of Girls, she said, and you will have a moment where you hate it because you've outgrown it. Mm. And hate might be too strong of a word, but I wonder how that resonates with you.
Mm. It's interesting. I have moments where I just feel like I don't want to talk about myself anymore.
Yeah, or answer the same three questions over and over again.
But I mean, the teachings that are in the book are teachings that I have shared for, I've been in business for 20 years. So I think that they're sort of a gathering and collection of those teachings. So I can see me getting to the point where I'm a little bit ready for the new thing. But right now, they're still ripe in my heart. They're sort of feel very like kind of universal in that way. I'm hoping that's how they land for folks. So they feel okay. The parts that were hard for me were, I shared before, you know, we were talking about the quick editing. So I had like just a very quick last edit. And there was Anishinaabe or Ojibwe word that was misspelled. And that I like wanted to fall to the ground because there's so much trauma wrapped up in me not knowing my language perfectly, me not end up being passed down because that was like stripped away from my grandparents. Like, so that almost killed me. Like, oh, it makes me emotional because it was so, I was just like, how did I miss that? Like, and if I just had one more day, you know, you'd go through all the things, maybe I would have seen it, but it was just so heartbreaking for me to see that. And then just to be so afraid Like, that's where my fear all rose in that moment. You know, I mean, there's typos in books, like, whatever, but it's like, that was really hard for me. And I thought, what if all the Indigenous people come and just call me out or just say all these like things to me? So that belonging piece, I just want to belong and be accepted. And then I make this mistake. And that came up in the audio version as well, because I don't know how to speak it perfectly. So I would stop and listen to the Ojibwe language dictionary to try to say it properly. And I still knew my pronunciation wasn't perfect or maybe even correct at times, but I came to a place where I'm like, at least I'm trying. That's all I can do. And it's not my fault. I don't know my language. It's not my fault. Like, I'm trying to learn. But that's where those things take over. That like perfect, that white supremacy perfectionism, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
to try to hold us down or keep us small. So those moments, like, obviously are still very awake in my being.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And you do talk about in the beginning of the book about, yeah, you cannot be fluent in your Indigenous language, and that, yeah, that comes with so much. And I know that, yeah, there's such scarcity in this ability to be a card-carrying Native person. And yeah, that's the world we live in. There's a lot of grief there. In the weeks leading up, I was very scared of being canceled. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're launching in a very tough cultural time around that. And we both talk about some hot button topics. Yeah. And right, that's so beautiful and wise of you to see the root of it, of just wanting to belong. Yeah, I too, in my own way, can relate to that.
And being canceled for your book would be so, like, that's like, you know, you pour so much into it and that feels so vulnerable. Like, just to, it's interesting. I was, when I did my audiobook, the feedback I got from the person recording it was like, this is very controversial. You're going to trigger a lot of people.
No.
Yes.
Don't say that.
I was so vulnerable. I just read like 3 days worth. Well, you know what it's like to record that.
Yeah.
So I was really raw. My heart was wide open and I was like, oh. So I had to do some work around that of just like, I mean, I knew that's a possibility, but I thought that's the first feedback I get. You know, it was so fascinating.
So that's a reflection of them. That's a reflection of them, right?
Yes. But it was very much like, and I think I did go into a little bit, like, this is just so real and raw for me right now because it's like very just recent, but I went into a bit of a freeze, almost like getting myself ready for stuff to come my way. And I just like got myself ready. And then, I mean, so far everything's been really beautiful. There's been some white fragility pieces, but I'm used to that. So nothing's come my way that's been really like, oh my goodness. So I think I've been in freeze mode for the last 5 weeks, just waiting for all of that stuff to come. And then I realized, oh my gosh, Badasha, you already went through that. Like, when that Dear White Woman letter went out, that all came up and people were just sending all of these messages and was so angry.
They were.
Yes. So you could forget.
Of course.
You could forget that you've already been through something and that you survived. You're still here and you've built some resilience along the way. And I really see how I forgot that leading up to the book.
Yeah. Yeah. The medicine of a book and what it brings up in us. And what it brings forth in us. I really hear you and feel that in myself. There's a way my skin is a little thicker, you know, and also, yeah. So you write it and then you launch it at least a year, if not, unless you're like a really famous person where the publisher's like, we're launching it ASAP, right? You write it and then it comes out later. And so you're capturing a moment, right? You channeled a moment. Mm-hmm. Like, it came through in a moment and then it comes out and we're a little different afterwards, but you know, there's the timelessness of, you know, that book captures, like you said, 20 years of work. And for me, it's about 12 years of deep work. And so there's the letting it, just like trusting that those words came in the right time and that they're going to have their impact on every person that picks up that book individually. And then they're having their impact on us. And there was something that happened to me during the writing for me, and I'm wondering if it happened for you, where I did a little, like, I'm glad I did this, where it was just like, I want these words to resonate 50 years from now when someone picks this up in a free library on the street, you know, or whatever it is. And I think that helps with the resilience piece, right? Is this is not like a pop self-help book, you know, there's something deeper there. And I'm wondering, in your writing process, did you have moments of like that where you could see how the book itself is embodying eldership, or how your words themselves are so much you know, how did you ever think about seven generations to come? How this book as an entity, as a child, as something of and from your body and your soul and your spirit and your ancestors would carry forward?
Yeah, I think I wrote the whole book like that. I mean, I wrote the whole book as though this is going to be my only book. I really, people are like, what's next? I'm like, nothing. No.
I have to recover.
I did pour everything that I know now, I guess, into it. I didn't really hold back anything. So, and people have, folks, the feedback has been, people have said this is a classic, which I think is a beautiful compliment. This will be, you know, read for many, a long time. And then also people say, I have to go slow. Like, I have to go slow. And at first I was like, oh, does that mean it's boring? Or is it like, but they're just like, I feel like I want to take it in slowly. And for some reason, that's really speaking to me now, because I thought, well, that's beautiful, because I really intended to, I poured in so much potency that I'm glad that it's being taken in slow little doses, little measures of medicine.
Yes. Okay. I think that is the deepest compliment, that someone wants to savor your words. I've been thinking a lot about how sometimes I get competitive with myself when reading books, and there's something about, it's the instant gratification. It's the inability to be with and savor the slow moments. It's just being of this urgency culture that I'm really looking into more deeply, of wanting to say I read the book, wanting to be done, wanting to cross the thing off the list, wanting to get to inbox zero, wanting to be done, because then I feel productive. And actually, like, I am inviting myself into a slower earth pace of life and how challenging that is. And so to savor a book, to, I've recently come upon this concept of pleasure delaying. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're like, I'm saving that movie for like a special moment, or I'm saving that food for when I can really sit down and enjoy it. And there's something about moving slowly through a book or any experience that feels like an honoring of oneself and one's nervous system. Yeah. So may our books be read slowly.
Yes. I actually really love that. That's a beautiful spell to put out into the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you posted on Instagram a few days ago, I mean, as of recording this, I think this is coming out in a month, about the postpartum. I don't know if you said fourth trimester, but you had this beautiful reel where you showed yourself holding your human babies, mm-hmm. and making this comparison. I'm wondering if you could share more about how, since we're talking and it's fresh, you know, mm-hmm. your book is 5 weeks old, mm-hmm. how you're doing, mama.
I remember sitting on the toilet seat, like with it down, and shutting the door. All my family was there, and just sobbing. And I remember my mom coming and going, what is wrong? And I just couldn't explain to her. I was so sad. I was so sad. And there's been moments of that where I'm like, I think I need a moment in the bathroom and locking the door and sitting, just sitting. Cause like, there's just this sort of grief. And I'm like, what am I grieving? I'm not sure what I'm grieving. Is it the end of this journey? It might be. Is it that this is out in the world right now? And what I think it is like, I remember feeling, I love being pregnant. And I remember feeling like they were so safe. Like, I knew what was going on. We had this like beautiful relationship, and nobody else was holding them, or nobody else was energetically impacting them. That was my big thing. Like, when they came out, it was like, oh, all these energies now are holding them. And, you know, if it was loud energy or intense, I get really like anxious about, like, they're not in my sort of safe space anymore. And that's what I realized. It was that grief. It's still there. Like, it felt very safe writing it. It felt very safe. I mean, your own little world, you're writing, you're communing, you're channeling, you're listening. And then all of a sudden it's like gone. And I did say, like, it's like an umbilical cord is cut, and it's a bit disorienting. So I think I feel disoriented and a bit like, when people ask me what's next, I mean, I know I have things that could be next, but I'm just like, I'm in a really big void, and it just feels very disorienting. Like, I just kind of feel like I just got to sit here and sink into this, because I don't know what else to do.
Mm. Yeah. Why do people ask that? I got it a lot too. Maybe it's like the more-ness of our culture. Or, yeah, like, why can't we just be with it? Why is it hard for us to be with it? I'm including you and me, you know, but like,
I know it's
to
like
be, and it's a rite of passage, right? Yes. So you are emerging changed, and that needs witnessing and space and integration.
I don't know if our society allows for really that integration. Like, I mean, that's what I, for myself included, but that integration of like celebration and then just like letting it be, like giving all the space for it just to like do its thing, right? And let and breathing life into all these different places. I think it's hard too because we can't see all the places it's going or touching. Like I'll get messages sometimes and I'll think, how did it make it there? Like that's always exciting for me, you know, or it's all across in Australia or all these places. Ah! And I think it's so exciting that it's there. So sometimes, yeah, just that being that void. Also, I always remember that's where the great mystery is. That's where the great mystery can touch me. This is where the magic can happen if you just let it be. But sometimes that means closing the bathroom door and crying and just letting all of that flow out, which is not, everybody's like, oh, you must be so excited and so happy. And I am, yes, and there's grief. So I think grief, and I wrote this, grief and joy can exist at the same time. Mm-hmm. And we need space for both. Energy allows space for both of that. Everybody wants you to be just joyful. Just celebratory.
Right. Like the mother coming in the bathroom and saying, what's wrong? You know, it's like we care, but we also have a hard time. Yeah, I was really sad. I felt disappointed. I felt really disappointed. And I think what I realized is I needed a ritual. I needed a ritual to be seen and honored, to make my, what did I say? I wanted my internal experience to be made external. And I'm wondering, if you did any rituals, either pre and or post publication day, to make your internal experience a tangible reality for you.
I love that. It was this recent full moon, actually, in the book. If you read it, it's the sacrificial moon. So it really is about like purification and cleansing. And I had a point with my therapist a couple of weeks ago, and he's like, you're not taking up your rightful space. So he said something about taking up your rightful space now that this is out here, like, your relative size. He said something about that. And I was really like, oh, this is so interesting. Like I had lost a bit of my connection to my power, I think, in this process, because I just wanted to kind of hide and shrink. So I really used that as a ritual of like taking up my size and my space again. And I stood on, I have this like little medicine wheel cloth, and I stood on that. I did this like beautiful wish paper and this huge smudge. And I just asked for anything that was kind of in my field that was just kind of like, I don't know, taking up the space that I didn't need anymore to be released. So I feel much better after that. So I did need a ritual to do that. And I think also I was sad, you know, planning like a launch in a pandemic, right? We didn't have really book signings. And at the time when we didn't even know, like we went out of lockdown, I don't know, very recently, we didn't even know what was going to happen. So I planned like a book party for the end of June for my closest, because everybody has capacity restrictions and indoor outdoor restrictions. So it was just all such a mess. And I was like, I love celebrating. And I just think I want to do that. So that will be the end of June, which is a little farther out than I would have wanted it to be. But I do hope by then I'll just be like, I'm happy to do this now. You know, I can celebrate this. But it is kind of sad and kind of sucky that we didn't get to like do the things that authors get to do, that you see authors doing, even writing. Like I wanted to write in like a coffee shop, or even go away for the weekend and write somewhere like beautiful in the forest or something. And none of that happened. So there's grief around that.
Oh, thank you for saying it. There's a Medium blog post that I will share with you and the audience in the show notes called Dear Pandemic Author that made me cry, because it was just like, yeah, that just really acknowledges what you're saying. Like these little moments that are like signposts and things maybe we were dreamed of for a long time. You know, I wanted to write a book for years, and I really had a vision of how it would go, and it did not go. And that's okay. What, you know, what medicine, what a life lesson. But I think you are so wise to plan, and any authors or future authors listening, I think this is wise, lockdown or not, to plan an in-person celebration later, after publication, because you might be in freeze or you might be in grief. It's sort of like a naming ceremony. I'm not sure what would be in your culture, but something to give it time. Your book will be walking then. I don't know. I'm really loving this baby metaphor.
It will.
You know, or like crawling or eating solids. And you could be like, okay, and I'm better. You're taking care of yourself and you're feeling more like, I don't know, back on earth and able to be like, hi, I did this. And for your community, be like, you did this. And how I'm very inspired in considering that for the year anniversary of mine, because that was something I really wanted to, and it just wasn't possible. Yeah.
And I think that's so, even if you think about, well, when we have babies and we have like mother's blessings and how they usually happen when you're still pregnant. And you really need to be blessed like about 6 months out, right? We really need to have that, like, or even the 40 days out, like when you're back in your body, when you're back in a little bit, at least you need something, I think, after that. So there is a part of me I can find that's like, oh, I shouldn't be celebrating still in June. You know, there's that, those little things that
enough
come
is
up.
Enough. Don't get too much. Too much.
People are so annoyed by you and your book. Yeah. So I just have to quiet those voices and just to be in the celebration.
And what modeling you can give your community in the celebrating of yourself, because this is what I'm realizing is we all have versions of that. Like, you know, people listening may not have books, but they have something. You know, I've just been so plunged into rite of passage theory, rite of passage practice, and seeing how that's really been taken away from us by, you know, just white supremacy and capitalism and these systems that have really wiped away our ancestral ways, and how all of us are going through things, not just like, you know, becoming parents or sealing partnerships, but creating things, getting new jobs, completing jobs, writing theses, you know, like big moments, writing books, starting businesses, closing businesses. I'm also very interested in like divorce parties, but like how can we be completing things as much as we're launching and birthing things? And so yes, heck yes, have the parties so that we can give each other fuel and permission to be doing that on any scale at any time.
Yeah. And I'm curious too about, you know, because we've both been doing intense things during this pandemic time. It's different. It's different, I guess, in different parts of the world, but even like the completion a little bit, things are opening up a little bit. I'm just finding that a lot of people are in the void right now. We've been in this like almost 2 year artificial winter where it's just been like, that's not really the natural cycle. We're not supposed to be frozen for 2 years like this or in this sort of, artificial winter. So I'm curious about even bringing a ritual to a little bit of what seems to be a bit of an ending. Or like, who knows what's going to happen. But it just feels like that, because I think a lot of people right now that I'm speaking to are like, I'm just floating. I don't have a solid container anymore. And I feel like they're sort of in the void too. So it's collectively, there's an interesting energy right now. So if we brought sort of that rite of passage into this time, I wonder what could happen.
This is major. Like you said to me, like you had a baby and did a book during the pandemic, and me being like, I'm just realizing how traumatic that was. And I'm thinking about how a lot of us are maybe just coming to, but some of us not even trusting because maybe this will go longer, who knows? Mm-hmm. And how ritual can bring meaning and bring us to this moment of like, oh, that happened. And I've been thinking about like when Krakatoa blew up, or the plague in Europe, or the wars and famines and experiences that I'm not comparing COVID to any of these things. But what I'm comparing is that cultural experience of like extended, dare I say, winter, extended experience of like, this isn't our cyclical seasonal way. Something has changed for us and we need to acknowledge it as such. And I'm wondering, like what did the people do after major events like this? And when they didn't, what impact has that had? You know, so this is something you've really got me thinking about that you and I are doing on a smaller scale for ourselves. And I love that you're bringing it in for everyone with, you know, what's emerging now. It does seem like we're emerging in some way. And how can we honor that? Yeah. Well, the book is out. Is there anything you want to share more about you and the book? First of all, people, go get it. And if you're... what I like to say is if your local like corner bookstore doesn't have it, ask them to stock it so that people can see it's a beautiful cover. Yeah. What do you want to share about it so people can get more? Oh, and audio. Listen to your beautiful, soothing voice on audio.
Thank you. Yes. I love the Audible version. I'm so amazed that there's two ways to take in the medicine. I think my intention for this book, like it got very simplified, was just that there were moments of remembering that somehow tears would spring to your eyes in some way, or you would feel like just a familiarity in some way, and you'd feel, okay, I know this from somewhere. So it might be in your blood and bones already. It might be your ancestors around you. And also that they have a vision for you. Thousands of ancestors are pouring their love into you, and they have this vision for you that the medicine you're carrying is meant to be here on the planet at this time. However you're meant to sprinkle those seeds is your way. And I think that that's really important because I think we need you at this time. So I hope my words activate some sort of remembering within every person that reads it.
Yeah, it's a really stunning creation. And I thank you for everything you did, a lot of hard work to make this a reality. This is something I've also realized, like every book that's out there represents prayer and courage and rejection and a real devotion to something deeper. So thank you so much for doing all of that.
And thank you for having me. I love speaking with you, and I love that we could share our experiences too, because sometimes it can feel lonely. So it's been so lovely to know that I'm not alone.
Thanks for being down to having this conversation about the real behind it all. I think it's going to serve in a deep way. So thank you, Asha. Thank you so much for listening. In a time when our attention is being pulled in so many directions, I feel honored you chose to devote some of yours here with me. If you want to check out show notes or listen to past episodes, go to belongingpodcast.com. And if you like what we talk about here and want to know more, you can subscribe to my newsletter at beccapiastrelli.com. I'll be with you again soon.